Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So day three at Wimbledon has just about come to a close. It is 9:30 p.m. I'm standing on the broadcast roof at Wimbledon, and it's been a funny old day. We've actually had some rain, first of all, which I wasn't expecting, and we're under very angry grey skies just at the moment, with just one or two little TV crews, lights illuminating presenters here on the broadcast roof, and the sun having set over to our right. And yes, we might get very wet very soon. So I think what we need to do is start talking about the day of tennis we've had. My name is David Law. This is the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and sponsored by Amazon Prime Video, the new home of the US Open from next month. And I'm joined today by Charlie Eccleshare from The Telegraph. And Charlie, I don't quite know how to sum up today. It's just been a weird old day. After the euphoria of last night in Great Britain because of the England football team's penalty shootout win, today, it's all been about the tennis because there's been no football, but it feels almost as though tennis hasn't quite been able to step up to the plate drama-wise.
Yeah, it's been a weird day. Sort of to use a footballing cliche, a day of two halves. We had the sunny first half, and then it deteriorated afterwards, and seemingly out of nowhere. I was on court three covering Wawrinka, and all of a sudden it just started pouring, and then, that was that.
Yeah, that was that. I mean, the big story is Caroline Wozniacki's out. Second seed, and somebody who's won a Grand Slam this year. So I think those two factors make you think, oh, big upset. And there's so many seeds that have gone out. She's the highest profile sort of numbers-wise. And yet at the same time, she's lost to a player in Ekaterina Makarova, who's beaten a lot of players on this sort of stage before. And Wozniacki has never even reached a quarterfinal in all the years that she's been coming here. So while it's a shock, it doesn't actually feel to me that big a shock.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Eastbourne last week and Wozniacki looked in great shape, you know, won there and, was moving really well. And she's got a really good record at Eastbourne. It's a real curiosity, which I asked her about why that is, that she's done so well there and always struggled at Wimbledon. And she did not take it well. I think the journalist's term is bristled in response.
She can bristle. She's quite a good bristler.
Oh, she was bristling with the best of them. She basically said, you know, you think it's that easy? Why don't you try and do it? I was tempted to say, well, you know, give me a go. You know, I actually would only have lost one round earlier, so that would have been interesting.
I actually quite like the fact that was this conversation last week or tonight?
Last week.
Right, well, she's had a few things to say tonight as well. I mean, to put it into perspective, first of all, just about the match, she played against Makarova. It was shaping up to be another one of those Wozniacki fightbacks, wasn't it? Because we had one of those at the Australian Open when she was 5-1 down against Jana Fett. Match points down, somehow won that second round match, ended up winning the title. Here, she was 5-1 down against Makarova. Then she was 3-5, love 40 down, and somehow managed to break back. And you started to think, hold on a minute, this is Wozniacki's territory right now. You could see Makarova getting a little bit tight out there. But she just kept on going for it and got the win. Now, afterwards, the gist of what Wozniacki said was, look, she went for everything. She went all in, were her words about Makarova. And she went for everything and it all came off. I'd be very surprised if you saw her go far here. Which, I mean, is a dynamite quote. But, you know, not one that has endeared her to certain people around, I would suggest.
Yeah, it's a pretty punchy thing to say, you know, bringing someone down when they've just had, you know, a great win. But that is Makarova. She does do that. There's a stat going around that only the Williams sister and Sharapova have more wins against top 10 players, of active players, at Grand Slams, which kind of tells you a bit she does have that sort of all or nothing game. But yeah, it's a bit catty from Wozniacki, isn't it? You know, it's almost saying it was a one in a million chance that she was going to pull this off, you know, which...
What do you think, though? I mean, do you listen to that and think, oh, that's not very nice? Or do you think, oh, that's a good quote. I'm in here. This is a good page lead.
Oh, definitely the latter. And also, I like it because that I can empathise, because that's probably how I would be. So it's nice to see them say what they really think, because let's be honest, you know, tennis is an immensely frustrating sport, even just as an amateur, let alone if you're a professional, how galling it must be when you lose matches that you don't think you should. I think it's great. We want to hear that from every player.
Right then, players, there you hear it. Charlie Eccleshare wants to hear more Caroline Wozniacki whinging after defeats. So that happened. And she also got a bit irritated, as a few people did, by the rise of the flying ants, which seems to happen on the third day of this tournament every year now. It's become a bit of a thing. It's Flying Ant Day. And if you haven't seen this, basically thousands of insects halfway through this match suddenly just found their way into court number one and just started landing on Wozniacki, to which point she went up to the umpire and basically seemed to think that the umpire should be producing some industrial-sized fly spray to get rid of them all.
Yeah, I think that as well hasn't endeared her to a lot of people. It felt a little bit like an act of desperation. She was then complaining about the rain, so I think that, you know, didn't go down too well. Especially as it's just one of these bizarre things that you kind of, I think, just have to deal with. And I remember last year it being this huge thing as well. And suddenly, this afternoon, there was a kind of murmur going around as the ants reappeared. And I was saying, oh, Christ, it's National Ant Day, Flying Ant Day again. It's a natural thing, apparently.
It's a funny old thing. And they only last the one day. Which match were you doing today? Were you on the Wozniacki match, or were you doing something else?
No, I was doing Stan.
So what was going on there? Because he went two sets to love down, and that match has been held overnight, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, in the end, the story was about the rain and that being the big talking point. Because going into that point, you know, I thought the story was going to be Wawrinka loses, sad. You know, he lost the first two sets. He had four set points, consecutive set points in the first set tiebreak. Didn't take any of them. Lost the last one with a dead net cord. And his face after, you know, it's that brilliant thing in tennis, this convention that you have to apologise. Fabiano didn't want to apologise. It was the most unconvincing apology you'd ever see, but he's got to do it. Wawrinka looked like he wanted to throttle him. They changed ends. That was at 6-6. Then Fabiano nicked the breaker, won the second set. And then it stopped. The match was stopped at Fabiano serving to stay in the third set, 5-6, 15-40 down, saves the two set points, and then at juice, with the rain pouring, I mean, it had to stop. And there's a great shot of Wawrinka kind of pleading with Jake Garner, the umpire, saying, you know, could we carry on? He had the momentum at that point.
He was starting to get inspired, wasn't he?
Yeah, and the crowd love him here. You know, you saw it against Dimitrov on centre court on Monday. You know, it's almost like he's an honorary Brit. Maybe with Murray out, you know, we need another kind of injury hit three-time Grand Slam winner to root for. He was and really fired up as well. You know, when Stan gets that kind of Stanimal mode.
Gets everybody else going, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So the crowd were loving him. Fabiano, he was quite vocal as well and had some Italians there supporting him. So it was good, you know, really good atmosphere. But just a shame that it ended when it did.
Well, also, I think it hurts. I think Stan realises it hurts his hopes because he has to get inspired. He, you know, what is it? Federer calls him Diesel. He calls him because it takes him a while to get going, but once he does, you know, he doesn't stop. And the problem of it carrying on overnight really is he's got to get this set to give himself not only to stay in the match, but to give himself time to get into that fourth set.
It had that feel, actually. Watching it, you did think if he got the third, he could sweep that momentum into the fourth, and then it could be they could have been in a decider very quickly. Yeah, as it is now, Fabiano can think about it a bit and rest up. It's hard to say, though, who will benefit more, because obviously Wawrinka's had a lot of injuries. Will that harm him that he's got to play 2 days in a row, or will it help him that he doesn't have to play potentially five sets straight? We'll find out.
I was over on centre court for most of the day. I did the Federer match second up, which was just a breeze. It was just like the first round. He was up against Lukas Lajko, who's a very talented player, but just not somebody that seems to discomfort Federer in any way. They've played each other three times at Slams, and all of them have been straight sets. Federer, he does have a draw here that just suits him down to the ground, it seems to me. I mean, that could change. He's up against Jean-Lennard Struff next, who's now come back consecutively from two sets to love down twice to win in five. This one, 13-11 against Ivo Karlovic. Big server. Will come in, will have a go. But, I don't know, all of this just feels tailor-made for Federer to me.
Yeah, and it has the slight feel of, you know, all the talk at the World Cup of good draws and bad draws, you know, different halves. It feels like Federer is definitely in the good half of the draw. You know, lots of players in that bottom half who you think are those kind of, you know, dangerous players to play. You look at that half, Federer, besides Cilic, who he won't play until the semi, I can't see anyone really hurting Federer that much. But just a word on today, I mean, he won 35 straight points on serve. How mad is that?
35 Blimey.
Straight points in a run of, what was it, eight love holds on a serve in a row. I mean, it was scary watching it.
Particularly, I always think, because he doesn't have a bullet serve. You know, he's not... Milos Raonic was hitting 148 miles an hour today. You're not seeing Federer get within 20 miles an hour of that, but he's racing through service games in 35 seconds.
Yeah, Tim Henman was saying he thought it was the most effective serve in the history of the sport, which is hard to disagree with. And yeah, it's the rapidity of it. I mean, I was trying to get the stats, but couldn't, of how long each player spent serving in that Struff-Federer match, because it felt like... And I think the figures would back this up. You know, Federer was racing through in about a minute, and it was straight back to Struff again. And
Lajko.
Sorry, Lajko.
Struff next.
Struff next. Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Struff's got to suffer next.
Yeah, I think I got the names wrong there, but that may be prophetic, because I think Struff will have a similarly tricky time. And it, coming off the back of that five-setter, I mean... lamb to the slaughter.
Yeah, it's a big ask, isn't it? And you mentioned Cilic. That was the other match I was on today, and as you say, we're sort of looking at that as a semi-final. Same time, first of all, Cilic has got to come through this one. He's 6-3, 6-3, 6-1 up against Guido Pella, and then they came off slightly bizarre circumstances, I thought, on court one, where every other match had been stopped because of this intermittent rain, and they actually kept the players out there on court number one for quite a bit of time afterwards, just sort of looking up at the skies and saying, look, well, we think it might stop. And then at 3-all they said, look, go and play another game, and it was pretty dark out there at that time. They played another game. Cilic slipped quite nastily at about 30-all, then got broken, and then they left the court. So, I mean, I hope he's okay, but it was slightly strange circumstances.
Yeah, it took on a slightly farcical edge when they came back on for the final resumption and had about 10 minutes of sort of standing around. Cilic was even laughing because he was kind of doing these runs on the spot. He looked like a sort of kid on school sports day. He didn't look like an elite athlete, and the crowd were kind of cheering him. And obviously then it took a slightly... more serious turn, as you say, because he slipped and could have hurt himself quite badly. And it was strange because they came out and restarted twice, during which time Wawrinka didn't come back at all. So I don't know if it was that the weather was extremely localized or the courts were just had handled the rain slightly differently, but it did make for a slightly strange spectacle because you had some courts playing and some not, and no one really knowing what was going on.
I'd still be very surprised if we saw Cilic even stretched to a fourth set, even though he's a breakdown here. I suppose Pella might come out and just serve really well and that's the end of that set, but 4-3 up, Cilic's just there's a feeling of reliability about him, and I think it was Mars McLagan in our commentary box has said there's a steel about him right now that even wasn't there when he reached the final last year. You don't feel that he's gonna suffer too much against anybody, even the top players. You feel as though he can give a good account of himself now.
Yeah, there's a real murmuring, I think, certainly in the press room, that, you know, Cilic is the one to watch. A lot of people think he's going to win the tournament.
What do you think?
I think he's got a really good chance. I certainly think if anyone's going to beat Federer, it feels like him. You know how often in tennis, it almost like how Andy Murray did, it just took him that bit of time to fully believe, and he had to have those heartbreaks. And it does have that sense that Cilic's time. I know he's won one Grand Slam before, but to do it here... it feels like his time is coming, so I certainly wouldn't be at all surprised if he beat Federer.
Simon has said he will and will win the title. Come on, Charlie.
Yeah, I know, but Simon, he's made a lot of predictions. And
if you make enough, this is my theory, if you make enough, even if you do say Petra Kvitova and Sloane Stephens will reach the final and play each other like I did, you know, there'll probably be another one to fall back on.
You're just going to keep making the same prediction. That's the key. Go on then, he'll win it. He'll sweep all before him, majestically beating either Djokovic or Nadal in the final.
Going to be interesting, isn't it? The one outlier there for me, though, is Raonic, because he's serving so well suddenly. Poor old John Millman came on the radio with us, and he said, you know, he was serving them right at me. They were in my strike zone, and I still couldn't even see them because they were going so fast. I tend to feel that Cilic has just got a better all-round game and will probably be able to handle it somehow.
Yeah, and I think the fitness, we still worry about Raonic. There have been so many false dawns. You know, he was talking about this in his press conference today. He said he feels fine, but you know, he is going to say that. We've heard him say that before, and then he pulls out the next match, and that would be the big question mark I would have against him. He's got the game. You know, he's done it on grass before. Queen's finalist, Wimbledon finalist. And it's funny, because when I was watching the start of that match against Millman, and when he was serving that well, I think his first three service games will have holds, and you just thought, whoever he's playing, that's going to be really, really hard. But then when he does play against people like Federer, he just doesn't seem to quite serve as effectively. I don't know if it's just that Federer and those guys are much better returns, or if there's a bit, he puts a bit more pressure on himself. But you know, it is another challenge serving that well in the really big matches.
Yeah, I would say that Federer reads serves better than anybody else, and is able to just manipulate them back into court. And I think it, and actually it happened in the Wimbledon final when Murray beat Raonic too. It gets to the point where Raonic is thinking, well, I've already hit them 140 miles an hour, I'm going to have to hit them even harder and even closer to the line. And then you're pushing your luck then, aren't you?
And you're so used to getting all those 3 points, it's very alarming that suddenly, wait a minute, that should be an ace. I've just hit a serve 140 plus, that should not be coming back, and then it is, and you're having to take this extra shot, and I think you're kind of panicking a little bit.
Yeah, you are. Now, the rest of centre court today, I mean, it was we remarked on it on the podcast last night, Charlie, the scheduling generally, it was two women's matches to one men's match on both the show courts. That doesn't happen very often, and it was an interesting move. And actually one note that I got on Twitter from one of our listeners did point out to me, now, because I was all for sort of, you know, maybe this is the moment that Wimbledon has had a little think and thought, right, actually we do need to equal this up, and we're going to do so quietly in our own way. Somebody did point out to me, but actually the other thing might be that it's really hot and they're going to save the courts by not having as many 5-set matches on them.
That's an interesting...
I haven't checked this out, but I'm going to go and find Tim Henman one day and see what gives.
That's an interesting take on it. I mean, yeah, there was a stagger around, first time in 25 years that on the 6 main courts there were more women's matches than men's matches. So it's been a long time, and it did feel like quite a significant step. I think as well, the main thing for me on that gender issue is that it just felt completely merited today. You know, I think there was no sense that this was done as any sort of gesture. They just were the more interesting matches, I think.
There were the first match was Karolina Pliskova against Victoria Azarenka, and that is on paper a very good match. Actually, Pliskova handled Azarenka surprisingly straightforwardly.
Yeah, I mean, that's two former world number ones. You know, why wouldn't you put that on one of the main courts? Yeah, it was definitely a surprising scoreline. I mean, probably slightly disappointingly in a way for the schedulers, because you want a match like that, I guess, to go long and sort of justify the billing. But as it was, Pliskova was really consistent, and she's another one, you know, who typically has done very poorly here, even worse than Wozniacki, and maybe it's finally her time. She's got the game for it, definitely.
Yeah, she should have. I still feel, even though she's reached a Grand Slam final, that we should have seen more from Karolina Pliskova so far in her career. Later on that court, Serena Williams was in action, and I mean, okay, it was a match that you would expect her to win, but she was clearly happier with her performance today than she was a couple of days ago, and she just looks like she belongs out here. She's not playing doubles here. So that takes that element of away that we had at the French Open.
She was a lot better today than on Monday, moving so much better. You know, she looked really good, really positive. That she was playing quite an awkward opponent. You know, it's a bit like when England beat Panama 6-0. You know, yes, it's you're not playing the best, but it was still a better, far better than average performance, that one from Serena today. She looked impressive.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Charlie Eccleshare currently just having to whip away the flying ants that are descending from above in this incredibly cloudy sky. It is dark at the moment. It feels as we're at 9:45 at night. I mean, obviously, this is even later than the Wimbledon final of 10 years ago. But, I mean, you would not be able to see a tennis ball right now coming towards you, would you?
No. I mean, it's very, very dark here.
We're basically the only people left. In Wimbledon, I mean, we could, you know, imagine if you were if you ever thought about what it'd be like to be invisible, if you could walk around now and go in all sorts of places that you're not supposed to. But we're not going to do it, Wimbledon, all right? I'm only sort of, you know, imagining. It's hypothetical, but anyway, it looks very, very dark, and the lights are still on indoors, and our colleagues are still writing away. What will the story be today, Charlie? Because it's an interesting one. Because, I mean, obviously the space is taken up at the moment in the Telegraph by the football. I mean, it's just such a remarkable story and euphoria last night and so forth. And today, I imagine it'll be follow-ups and all the rest of it. Where does tennis sit, and what will tennis look like in the paper?
We've still got a fair amount of space. The sports section is a lot bigger during the World Cup to kind of accommodate. So there is space. The thing that they loved was Wozniacki and the Flying Ants. You know, you've got a Grand Slam champion is one thing, and then throw in some flying ants, and wow, what a story! You know, everyone loves them. They also really like the rain. You know, the rain that I've been writing on, the Stan and Cilic, you know, descending into farce. You know, people love rain and they love ants. That's
people love rain and ants.
I believe so.
The Brits. This is what we are, people.
That's the thing. We're in this heat wave, but rain has to be a factor, doesn't it?
Yeah, Goran Ivanisevic once said to me in one of his favourite put downs, "You British people, all you know about is tea and rain." Thanks, Goran. So, what else has happened today? Anything else of note? Katie Swan was the only British player in the singles, wasn't she? And she met her match today and then some.
Yeah, a bit of a reality check, and also a reality check for those journalists who spent all day yesterday researching about her, carefully crafting this piece, saying how wonderful she is, and then she loses the first set 6-love. But that's the job, the industry that we're in. Yeah,
she made the second set competitive, didn't she? She was actually, I think, 4-1 down or something like that. She got back to 4-3 and she made it competitive. But it's another little insight into what's still to come for her.
Yeah, I think enough to feel really positive.
Buzanescu, wasn't it, playing? He was a wily player.
Very good. I mean, she looked a cut above having beaten Begu, who's the world 36, you know, and we thought, wow, that's a great result. But yeah, a cut above today. Just more sort of court smarts. You know, her angles were really good. She constructed the points really cleverly. But it's easy to forget. Someone's only 19, you know, and this will be a huge boost for her. I think because she had that, she was only 15 when she got to the Australian Open Juniors final. So it feels, I mean, she was so young then, so it feels like she's a bit further along. But this will be great for her, and she's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Today we had in our commentary box on BBC 5 Live, we had Laura Robson with us for a couple of matches. And, you know, it was hard not to just get a little bit nostalgic, really. And we actually talked to her about 10 years ago and the fact she won the junior title here that year that Nadal and Federer played that incredible final. And it is pretty heartbreaking to know what's happened to Laura since then. Obviously, she had those incredibly good results when she beat Kim Clijsters at the US Open and Li Na, and then she beat Petra Kvitova at the Australian Open. I mean, these are proper players she was beating back in 2012 and 2013 early on then. And then she had that awful wrist injury, which basically cost her 2.5 years of her entire career and more, maybe 3 years of her career. And she's never rebuilt it since then, unfortunately. Hopefully one day she will. But tomorrow she's going to go and have hip surgery, which Well, that's not a nice thing to have to go through. Wish her all the very best. But, yeah, hopefully Katie Swan doesn't have that sort of run of injuries. I think she's had her own ill health to deal with over the last year or two. As has Katie Bolter, who's going to be in action tomorrow. She's had some ill health. But another great big stride for her because she's into a second round, although it's Naomi Osaka of Japan. Huge hitter tomorrow. And I would have thought pretty unlikely that she's going to get the win in that one.
Yeah, I think probably similar odds to what Swan faced today. And I think being competitive would be a not bad result. She obviously won't go in with that mindset. She talked to a few of my colleagues earlier. I think she was quite guarded. I think staying focused on the match at hand. And it's strange, actually. I'm pretty sure Osaka's actually younger than her, which is a bit of a reminder of, you know, how far she has to go, because Osaka has obviously achieved so much in such a short space of time. But a difficult match against Osaka, who, as you say, is a very, very powerful player.
That match is first on court number 2, I think, at 11:30. So that's the early one for Katie Bolter. We'll watch that one with interest. And it is a Brit day tomorrow, isn't it? Because there's also Johanna Konta in action against Dominika Sibulkova tomorrow. And then Kyle Edmund is also up against Bradley Klarn, I think, of the United States. I don't know too much about him. Those two matches are on centre court after Rafael Nadal has played against Mikhail Kukushkin from 1 o'clock. So that's your centre court order of play tomorrow. What do you think about those two British players? I mean, let's assume really that Nadal is going to come through, but what do you think about the two British players there? Konta against Sibulkova, who's the player who got knocked out of the seedings by Serena Williams, and Kyle Edmund.
I would be not at all surprised if Konta lost that. I think she is in a bit of a difficult patch at the moment. I know she's had some slightly better results on the grass, but to me she doesn't look the player that she was a year ago. She, and maybe this is just because of how she is with the media, but she seems a little bit passive-aggressive, not entirely happy with how she's been written about. And I just don't think she's in as good a place mentally as well as she was a year ago. Sibulkova is a really horrible opponent to get, you know, effectively a seeded player as early as the second round.
Former Australian Open runner-up, yeah, from a few years ago.
So it's a tough one for, you know, it's just the sort of match she does. You know, it's always the way, isn't it? When you're really desperate for confidence and maybe a kind draw, you get exactly the opposite. So I think that one will be tricky. I think Edmund will win quite easily.
This guy, probably the biggest match of his life, isn't it? Bradley Klarn, a United States player who's been playing for a while. He's ranked outside the top 100, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, I think 168. He's 27, another one of many who came through the college system. A player who's been on the Challenger Tour for most of his career. The thing with Edmund, unless you've got big weapons, it's tough, because then the match...
If he's on.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if he's on, the match is played on his terms. And, you know, grass is the hardest surface to defend on. So it's really difficult once he gets the upper hand, as he did to Alex Bolt on Tuesday.
Feels a bit to me like Edmund is almost where Konta was a year ago. Obviously, he's younger, but he's just sort of building these blocks, this foundation to his game. And he actually seems, I don't know, I think it works for him that England's football team are doing what they're doing, because Carl's a big football fan. He's sort of buying into all that as well. It's England against Sweden next. He's got a Swedish coach, so he's having a bit of fun with that. And I don't know, I just feel as though he's playing this right at the moment. And he's never going to be one who really builds his own hopes up. But he's saying, I think, the right sort of things. He believes in his own ability now. There's no longer this sort of slightly embarrassed to be there look about him, which sometimes I used to get the sense that there was. He's kind of owning the situation.
Yeah, he's become more of an alpha male, which was, you know, one of the things that Freddie Rosengren deliberately targeted. It was something that Kevin Anderson worked on last year as well. It's a big thing. And, yeah, it makes a big difference, and he should be. You know, he's got this big, imposing physique. He's 6'3", I think. You know, he's a big, strong guy with a huge, huge game. And as soon as he started believing in himself, the results came, and he can bully players you know, in a really brutal way with that forehand.
And he could play Djokovic in the third round if they both get through. I mean, I know my mind's running away with me. What else have we got on court one tomorrow, Charlie? Because that's your centre court lineup. It's Nadal against Kukushkin, then it's Konta against Sibulkova. It's Edmund third up against Bradley Klarn. What have we got on court one?
So court one starts the resumption of Cilic Pella, so we don't know how long that's going to take, obviously. And then Halep, who's on center on Tuesday, she's against Zheng. Then Del Potro, Feliciano Lopez. That's a fun match, isn't it? And then another fun match, Taylor Fritz against Alex Zverev.
It's good order of play for them.
Yeah. I mean, well, again, this kind of speaks to that much stronger on the men's side anyway, bottom half, where you've got a lot of these guys, you know, Zverev, Del Potro. These are tricky players. You know, they're players that have got at least a semi-final, a final in them, potentially. Del Potro, Lopez could have a slight exhibition-y feel about it. You know, those are two very...
Could go on a while as well, that. Well, what about court two? After Bolter is played at 11:30, anybody else of note out there?
Well, a certain 12-time Grand Slam champion Novak Djokovic is on court two.
Really?
Yeah. Wonder when the last time that was.
I think it's. I think it might have happened actually last year. You know, because, and maybe I'm wrong about that, but I sort of feel as though it did. We'd have to have a look, but I wonder how he'll feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's had this slight chip on his shoulder, hasn't he, about the fact that of the big four, he sometimes. I wrote a piece on, you know, where is the love for Novak Djokovic? And this might, he may not say it publicly, but I reckon that would irk him quite a lot.
Who's he got?
Horacio Zabelos.
Okay. Right, well, we'd think he would have that one, wouldn't we? So it's Edmund against Djokovic. We've already picked that. Let's hope it comes true. Quickly, what are the rest?
There's then a really fun, interesting match. Bernard Tomic against Kei Nishikori. And if Tomic wins that, and if Nick Kyrgios wins his match, those two play in the third round.
Ooh, where's Kyrgios playing?
How fun would that be?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Let's find Kyrgios. He's on court three against Robin Haase, which, yeah, that could be a good match as well. Kyrgios was on court 12 the other day, so they're keeping him on those courts, which he's kind of happy with, isn't he? You know, he gets big support there and he can mess around, have a bit of fun.
This is awesome. Right. Okay. Well, that's the order of play for tomorrow. I can barely see Charlie on the broadcast roof at the moment. It is so dark now. It's 10 o'clock at night. We're the last ones here and I'm going to go and have a bit of a snoop about because, I mean, you know, when else do you get to do something like that? Charlie Eccleshare, lovely to have you with us as always.
Thank you very much.
And we will be back, no doubt, with Charlie at some point during the fortnight. Catherine Whittaker will be back with us tomorrow. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We've been sponsored by Amazon Prime, the home of the US Open in the UK from next month. And we are, of course, brought to you in association with our executive producers, Melanie Bowes, tennisballs.com, SSS. We're sponsored by the Manga Club as well. And, of course, our mascot is Charlie the Ferret. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.